Support for Boston Public Radio comes from Newbury Court, a full-service retirement community in Concord, Massachusetts. Newbury Court is committed to creating active, independent lifestyles for persons 62 and over. More at newburycourt.org.
Ahead on Boston Public Radio, live from our GBH studio at the Boston Public Library. In 2018, Cambridge Analytica came to symbolize the dark side of social media when we learned they accessed private information on more than 50 million Facebook users. In response, AG Maura Healey opened an investigation into Facebook to get to the bottom of how it was harvesting our data and violating privacy laws along the way. 2 years and three civil subpoenas later, a mass judge has ruled that Facebook has to turn data over to the AG's office on how it uses ours. We'll ask her about this, and she'll take your questions and calls on this month's edition of Ask the AG.
At noon, Emily Rooney is here for her famous list of fixations and fulminations and to reveal her 2020 presidential candidate soulmate. Then Callie Crossy talks about how hip-hop went from being considered gangster music to being quoted on the Senate floor. That's next on Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH.
This is where you say I'm Marjorie Egan and he's Jim Browdy.
I think I have a microphone problem.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Microphone is fixed now.
Who are you again?
I am Marjorie Egan. You are Jim Browdy. You're listening to Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH. We are broadcasting live. We do every Friday from the WGBH studio at the Boston Public Library. I'd like to point out, Yves Littlefaith,
yeah.
I was talking. Actually.
You were speaking?
It was a technical difficulty, Jim. So I did know that it was the start of the show. I just want to get on the record there before we begin.
Well, one more quiz.
Yeah.
You know who you are. You
I
know
am.
Who I am. Who is she?
I'm not sure. I think
okay,
she might be
exactly.
the Attorney General.
We're joined by Attorney General Maura Healey. The Attorney General is here for Ask the Attorney General. She does it every month, taking our questions and yours. You can tweet the AG at BOS Public Radio. You can send her an email at bprwgbh.org. The preferred route is to call her directly, 877-301-8970. Attorney General, it's great to see you. Thanks for being here.
Oh, it's great to be with you both. Good morning. And a nice sunny morning.
Warm
morning here in Boston.
That's right. We're not freezing here as we sometimes are next to the glass windows here at the Boston Public Library. Anyway, tell people what happened with Facebook and data that you're going to be getting and why this is something that we should be, I think, excited about.
Yeah, I think this is really great work by the lawyers and the team at my office. Kudos to them. But basically, we've been investigating Facebook for a while in the wake of the Cambridge Analytica revelations. We sent subpoenas to investigate the extent to which we believe Facebook is engaged in the systemic collection of our data and then the sale and use of that data to make money for Facebook at the expense of our own privacy. And, you know, we've seen this happen through our investigation. We've learned a lot about how Facebook is providing our personal data, unbeknownst to us, to, you know, any number of entities out there. But what we still don't know, because Facebook has fought us every step of the way, is all of the apps, all the developers that were able to access our information and data and what they've done with that. And so we are trying to get answers. They've fought us every step of the way in court, and actually the court ruled in our favor the other day, ordering Facebook to turn over all of that data and information to us so that we can continue with our work. And I just think this is really, really important. What these platforms, what Facebook is doing, what they've done, and we really need to get to the bottom of it and hold them accountable for the lack of transparency and the misuse of our information and data. And it's, you know, if they had only protected our personal data in the same way they're trying to protect their own information from review by our office and the scrutiny of others, we'd probably be in a better place. But that isn't the way Facebook's gone about this.
You know, I should know this, Attorney General. My apologies in advance for not. Do they disclose in incredibly fine print that they are sharing our personal data and none of us read it and nobody should be expected to read it? Or do they deceitfully suggest they're not sharing our data?
We believe it's the latter. I mean, certainly there are disclosures out there, and I get the point, Jim, who's, you know, always reading all that's out there. But I think that what's become clear, particularly, you know, with the Cambridge Analytica story breaking, we learned that Facebook then had allowed 87 million users to have their data end up in the hands of Cambridge Analytica. But that was only the tip of the iceberg, and I think no one could know or appreciate, except maybe the people who were working for Facebook, the extent to which they had been out there every day collecting our information, unbeknownst to us, and selling it on to entities that were going to profit and make a boatload of money off of us. Facebook, of course, continues to generate their other issues with Facebook and Google about how they, you know, generate their ad revenue. But, you know, disclosures aside, Jim, I think nobody has, we have a right to know how our information is going to be used and who has access to that information. And part of the issue here is, not only were they not transparent about that, but they continue to fight us every step of the way in our ability to understand what they're actually doing currently, in addition to what they actually did and who's got our stuff out there. So this is a case that I feel really strongly about, and I'm really proud of our office's leadership on this. I don't know that Facebook expected that we would continue to press them. I think they wanted to make a deal and make us all go away. But I just think this issue is too important, the use of our data and people's privacy.
What are you looking at? By the way, our number is 877-301-8970 to speak directly to the Attorney General. What are you looking for? What kind of relief are you looking for? Is it just information or is it more?
Well, in the first instance, it's information. We don't need to know what happened. You know, how many other apps did Facebook give our information to? We've got to understand what the actual conduct was. Then we can talk about remedy. But obviously, remedy involves a lot more controls about the use of our data, the use of our stuff. You know, this stuff should belong to us, and we should be the ones making the decision whether or not we want someone to use that information, sure, sell that information, right? It shouldn't be the call by default of the company. It should be the call of the user. It's our information.
Permission kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, I just wonder, with all the bad acting that Facebook has, we know that they have done it, they've been accused of doing, think it's going to happen down the road? There's been a lot of calls for much tighter regulation or even a breaking up of Facebook.
Including by your candidate, Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah. I think real genuine concern about the extent to which these platforms really dominate and run the world. I mean, whether you look at consumerism, the financial markets, the use of our healthcare data, online learning, I mean, we can talk about how data is used and ads and the targeting done with respect to elections, right? So we have got to get a better handle on it. I support the calls from some members of Congress to act federally to deal with this because, you know, for a long time, you know, Facebook said to us, we've got this under control. Okay, the news broke. We sent CIDs. They fought the production of documents. Meanwhile, they assured us that they've righted the ship. They've taken care of this without producing any real verification. And, you know, they insisted that they had it under control, that our data was safe. And, you know, I'm all for trusting, but trusting and verifying. And this is a company that just hasn't been straight about what they've done. Meanwhile, they've done a whole lot of harm. And so they need to come clean. Again, I just want to be clear with the public. They fought us every step of the way trying to keep our court case a secret. They didn't even want the public to know that we had filed a case until the Times, New York Times, ran a story on it. And they fought the production of documents, including the results of their own company internal investigation on some of this. So we want the data, and then we can talk about policy and best practices going forward.
You know, in terms of privacy, I was going to say an unrelated note, but it's not. I read for the first time about this place called Clearview this week that allegedly has accumulated 3 billion facial images at a time. We're going to talk to Callie Crossley about how Cambridge has just added it to the list of, I guess, total of 4 Massachusetts cities or towns that have banned the use of facial recognition software. But in a related thing, they have 3 billion images, which means you take a picture of somebody and you can identify who they are, where they live, all that sort of thing, not available to the public yet. They say that some law enforcement agencies are already using the software. Is anybody in Massachusetts using it, as far as you know? Or as your office have access to it?
No, we are not in the Attorney General's office. I can't speak to others. I'm not aware of it, Jim, but this raises serious issues, right, about privacy and liberty, due process even when it comes to criminal investigations and the like. And so it's a really important conversation and topic.
Okay, let's move on to what is going to happen here at 1 o'clock today. How close have you been able to follow this impeachment stuff, and what's your reaction to 2 days so far of opening arguments from the House managers?
Well, first of all, I think that, you know, as a lawyer, I think that what the House managers have done, how they've made the case is clear and unequivocal to anybody who wants to be objective about this. I mean, they have laid out the case for abuse of power. I thought it was really compelling. I'm watching it at night, you know, mostly, and then going back to rewatch some of what happened during the day. But I've just been so impressed by the presentation, the use of text, the use of emails, the use of video testimony. I think it's been a really well-done presentation. And I think that Adam Schiff, in particular, to listen to him last night in his closing was just really moving. I mean, I almost was brought to tears just watching him, as he is nearly in tears, talking about the gravity of this moment and the need for those senators to do and fulfill their constitutional duty. Now, whether they will, no. I have no hope that we're going to get enough Republicans to let alone allow the questioning of witnesses, but certainly not to convict. And if there were ever a case where a president needed to be convicted on impeachment, this is one.
Have you, you know, one last related thing on well, two last related things on impeachment, and then we'll get to your calls. By the way, we're told we're having technical problems with the phone lines, so if you're having trouble getting through, keep trying.
Or you can email.
Or you can email, that's right. Marjorie will read the emails. Say that again.
BPR@WGBH.org if you have emails, or you can also post things at Twitter. At Boss Public Radio.
BOS Public Radio. Two related things. As I said, we had a discussion the other day after a piece appeared in Time.com with Andrea Cabral, former Secretary of Public Safety. I had a discussion with the editorial page editor of The Globe last night, the new editorial page editor, about an argument that was made by a former lawyer for Spiro Agnew, of all people, that when the Constitution says the Chief Justice shall preside, it doesn't mean as a potted plant. It means it's never been a she, he shall preside, meaning like a judge presides. He shall decide if evidence is appropriate. He shall decide. Are you part of that school? Clearly, Chief Justice Roberts does not believe that is his function.
Yeah, I mean, he looks like he just does not want to be there. unfortunately, we've got a situation where the senators who are supposed to do their job and carry out their responsibility faithful to the Constitution have not indicated that they're going to do so. So I wish the Chief Justice would be more active on that front.
Do you think he has that power?
He may. I'm going to leave that to constitutional scholars, Jim. But I got to say, this is an open and shut case. I mean, the evidence could not be clearer. And I hope that somehow we find a way for this to, notwithstanding whatever the Senate decides in terms of a vote, for the American people to try to take in what really happened here and how terrible it is to have somebody who is our president who is acting time and time again in their own self-interest, personal interest, to the detriment of our democracy, our constitution, our system of government that we all rely on, regardless of party. This is not this should not be a partisan issue. I believe that no one in this country is above the law, least of all the president. That's why we have this kind of government set up. We don't have authoritarian regime. We don't have a monarchy. Everyone, including the president, is accountable. And the House managers and the House did its work. They have made their case. It is absolutely clear. And Donald Trump should be convicted. He should be removed from office. Will he be? I doubt that. But that's what November is about.
You worried about the impact on your candidate by being essentially locked up 6 days a week through Iowa, potentially through New Hampshire?
I think it's really difficult for all of these candidates, certainly for Senator Warren, but you know the others as well. But I also know for Senator Warren and I'm sure for the others, they understand that this is their higher duty and calling, and they've got to be there, and they're there.
We can take calls in a second, but one last. A prior candidate of yours, I know Warren is your current candidate, was Hillary Clinton. You had a pretty close relationship with her. Did you read her comments about Sanders this week from this Hulu documentary coming out in March? Nobody likes him. He's never accomplished anything. And in the first instance, even though she later said otherwise, suggested she might not even endorse him if he was the nominee. Yeah. Does that trouble you?
I didn't read them. I read about them. She's entitled to her position and view on things, I suppose.
Okay, can we do calls? I'm not clear. The answer is yes or no. Okay.
Gordon in the car. Thank you for calling, Gordon.
You're on with the Attorney General.
Hi there. I have a question for the Attorney General.
Yep.
I live in a condominium, and from my point of view and the point of view of a lot of people that live there, it's not being properly managed. And I've called the AG's office a couple of different times, and I've been told that, well, there really isn't much that we can do for you because there's not much in the way of laws covering condominiums in Massachusetts, which didn't sound right, but so I'm taking the question to the top.
Well, she is the top. Here she is. How about it, Attorney General?
All right, Gordon.
And she's laughing since you can't see
not
her.
At you.
Not at you.
Not okay. at you, Gordon. I have sympathy for you, having once lived in a condominium. Here's the deal, Gordon. An office like ours, we have far more ability under the law to act when it comes to a landlord-tenant situation, an apartment situation, manufactured housing situation, some of these over 55 communities, we have some authority. When it comes to a condominium, it really becomes more of a private right of action, meaning that is something to be taken up with the condominium board and through private civil action. It's not something that we have laws that we can enforce or deal with. I know that's unsatisfactory to you, Gordon, and I'm sorry about that, but that's the truth of things. Now, if the trustees, for example, were stealing, you know, and misappropriating funds, of course, then we could have a role. But a lot of times these issues come down to what essentially are private, viewed under the law as private disputes.
Gordon, thanks for the call. 877-301-8970.
By the way, I'm not sure my email is working either, so maybe some... Oh, it just flew in. Never mind.
Well, you know what they can do? They can do like the senators are allowed to do. They can hand us a note that we can read to the Attorney General.
It. They're coming through.
Okay,
that was gone for a while, but they're coming through. Attorney General, before we get back to more calls when we hope that they're working a little bit better, the 47th anniversary of Roe v. Wade... is coming up. I think it's the 23rd, so I guess actually...
No, it was 2 days ago.
The date mm-hmm. is
yeah,
passed.
Yeah, 2 days ago.
But the March for Life is today. The President of the United States is going to be addressing that march. It's kind of unusual for a president to do that live, but he's doing that. There's a lot of concern about protecting reproductive rights. I know you've talked about that. So what should we be doing?
I think what we need to do is act right now in Massachusetts and... pass the Roe Act, which is an important piece of proposed state legislation that basically says, hey, no matter what happens at the federal level and no matter what the Supreme Court may do in the future, and there are real concerns about whether this Supreme Court would overturn Roe, this legislation would expand abortion rights, protect abortion rights here in Massachusetts. It would first off codify Roe, so the right to abortion under law here in Massachusetts, and it would do some important things. Right now in Massachusetts, it's actually harder for a woman, for example, who has a fatal, lethal fetal diagnosis to get an abortion here. Oftentimes, women may have to go outside of Massachusetts, where we have the best health care in the world, to get access to abortion. This would allow for abortion after 24 weeks for women who face a lethal fetal diagnosis. And then it also would change the law to ensure that women don't have to go before a judge in certain instances to get permission to get an abortion. This is an issue that disproportionately affects women of color and those with low incomes. And again, my bottom line is, you know, in this time, as we've seen time and time again, the Trump administration take us backwards. Here in Massachusetts, we need to double down on progress in the future. And certainly abortion is about a woman's right to privacy and to make a decision for herself. But it's also about empowerment, you know? And I talk about the fact that women are nearly 50% of the workforce. They hold the majority of college and graduate degrees in this country, and yet a woman's ability to go to school, stay in school, join the workforce, stay in the workforce, often depends on the decisions in the healthcare she's able going to be able to get in the family planning that she is going to be able to do, right? And so it's just really, really important that we pass this legislation here, again, the Roe Act, and that we'll continue to fight efforts to in other states to curtail, and also at the federal level, to curtail abortion rights. My office is leading a brief in support of a case that stands up for women's access to reproductive health care. That'll go before the Supreme Court. That was just taken up the other day.
Is that this Louisiana case?
Yeah, there's a couple cases. Yeah, and there's one on coverage for contraception as well, where, you know, the Trump administration is basically trying to pass, under the guise of so-called religious freedom, the right to do a few things: discriminate against people, members of the LGBT community, and in this area of reproductive rights, to allow religious freedom, so-called religious freedom, to basically cut off women's access to the reproductive health care that they need. And that's just wrong, and that's not actually how the Constitution is supposed to be interpreted. As for the president, you know, being down at this march, first time ever, there are a lot of things that, you know, are first time ever with Donald Trump. But I want to be clear, and I think we know, you know, his treatment of women over the years, the irony of this, right? But this is all about pandering to a base that, you know, he's relying on as he moves into November.
You know, just two quick follow-ups on this. I thought that the Massachusetts Constitution protected Roe even if the Supreme Court overturns it. Am I right or wrong?
You're right, and there is a case that interprets it that way, but it's always good to have a law in place,
yeah, okay,
and to really make that clear as a matter of law here.
And the last thing is, a lot of people that are pro-choice get very queasy when we talk about post-24-week abortion. So explain why, with the fetal, that this is something that's necessary.
Well, this is very rare. It's a very rare occurrence instance. But for those women and families who learn that, you know, the fetus in utero has a lethal, fatal diagnosis, like they're not going to be able to survive. You can imagine, I can't imagine, but one can imagine the pain of that, the anguish of that. And so in those instances, we believe it's important that women are permitted to seek the medical attention that they need and consultation with their doctors and make sure that they have access to abortion even if it's after 24 weeks. It's a very obviously complex and personal medical decision. But see, in some other states, if you learn of that and you're after 24 weeks, you're able to go to your hospital.
Didn't a Massachusetts woman have to go to Colorado at great expense?
It's a great example, right? Because you can imagine how just difficult that hearing that, right? That your baby is not going to survive a day outside of the womb. So isn't it only right that you be able to access care here in Massachusetts? Why should you be forced to go to Colorado to have that addressed?
We think the phones are working, so let's try Lisa from Boylston. You're on with the Attorney General, Maura Healey. Hi, Lisa.
Hi there. I'm a big fan, Ms. Healey.
Oh, thanks, Lisa.
And I hope I can explain my question. I read an article about Trump's immigration policy where states need to put in writing that they will accept immigrants. And I looked into this a little while ago, and I don't believe Massachusetts was on the list of states that had done that. And I just wanted to find out, have we let the Trump administration know that we are accepting immigrants, or am I totally misunderstanding?
Well, Lisa, I'm happy to take your number, and you can talk more with folks in my office, but certainly it remains the case that there are refugees and asylees who come to Massachusetts, and I think we've been a state and continue to be a state that welcomes and tries to support members of our immigrant community. I certainly have been clear about that out of my office. I mean, we sued day one to stop the travel ban. We've sued successfully to defend the DACA program and to protect Dreamers. We sued the other day on the SNAP proposal, the changes in food stamps, because you know that's so important. A person's ability to access food stamps for them and their children, you know, goes to real issues of public health. We shouldn't be limiting access to food in this country. And the old rule used to be that it was up to states to decide whether you could give food stamps to somebody or extend the time for that. And that's the rule that the Trump administration is trying to take away. So I think immigration continues to be a really, really important front, has been the last 2-3 years. And I just encourage people to come together and continue to support our immigrant communities. I also say this. The fact of the matter is we have an economic imperative in this country to do so. To just take Massachusetts alone, 1 in 5 workers, 1 in 5 in the state of Massachusetts were born outside of this country. We're here in the city of Boston, 1 in 3 workers born outside of this country. You know, immigrants help build this country, they help drive this economy, and we need to support them. And by the way, I think as I look around here, I think about our healthcare institutions, research institutions, hospitals, universities. That Iranian student who was just denied, even though a federal judge had ordered the Customs and Border Patrol to allow this Northeastern student to continue and come through here, they actually, this is how dangerous things are right now. We've got the CBP, a federal agency, just blatantly ignoring a federal judge's order and shipping that student back. That's so wrong. And, you know, when we did the travel ban case, a lot of what we talked about was the fact that so many of these institutions I just referenced depend on people from other countries to come and teach our students to study here, to perform research here. You know, so the Trump administration, run by Steve Miller, is totally wrongheaded. It's taking us backwards as a country, and I'm proud of Massachusetts for standing strong on this.
Can I just say, I want to get back to what Lisa said. The only reason I know the direct answer to her question is because the governor.
Why didn't you interrupt me?
Well, because the governor was here yesterday, and we never got to it, unfortunately. Not here, but on our show. He has written a letter to the federal government saying we will accept refugees. However, we also learned yesterday the mayor of Springfield. Yeah. has said, I'm not doing it. And the question we actually had for you later, but Lisa prompted it, is if the state has taken a position, which obviously is supported by the governor and you, the attorney general, can a mayor opt out and say, we will not take refugees in our community? It can't, right?
Well, do I know the legal answer to that question,
yes.
Jim? No, but I think my answer is no, and we should go talk to the mayor about that.
Okay. You know, speaking of that, before we take a break, if we can stay on the governor for a second, you were in the audience at the Martin Luther King breakfast when the controversy arose about the governor's remarks following comments from Congresswoman Presley. And she said things like, I am so tired of people saying that what is ruining this country is identity politics, it is hate and white supremacy that is codified through legislation. She went on for quite a bit to rather thunderous applause. The moderator said, does anybody have a comment? The governor said, I'm sitting here thinking that the mayor made a smart strategic move. Sitting over there, meaning the mayor, the only thing I can add to that rant, okay? And he took a lot of heat for that. And by the way, not many people have talked about the fact he went on to say her comments were absolutely so spot on, et cetera. We asked the governor, and you, I'm sorry, you tweeted about it almost immediately, saying Presley, Ayanna Presley spoke the truth about racial injustice and disparities faced by black women and people of color at the MLK breakfast, thoughtful, personal, anything but a rant. Language like that is dismissive, perpetuates the very harm we seek to end. And yesterday we asked the governor about all of this, the response, and here's what Governor Baker had to say to us.
I heard from a couple people on my team that that the use of the word rant had upset a bunch of people. And I called the congresswoman. She called me back, and I said, I'm very sorry that I stepped on a beautiful moment for you, and I apologized for the use of the word. I said it was a poor choice of words, but that I thought what she said was exactly right.
What was her reaction to your apology?
She accepted it.
What's your reaction? What did the governor have to say?
Well, I'm glad the governor apologized. What Ayanna Presley had to say was certainly not a rant. She was speaking the truth, and she was speaking the truth of a lot of people. And I was in the audience that morning, and there were audible gulps and reaction to that. It just sort of hurt. It was a stinging comment in that moment, and I think not just for women of color, but women in general. Ayanna Pressley had taken the stage, and you know, this was one of her first appearances, two public appearances, after her revelation of alopecia. And you know, she spoke to that. She spoke to the real disparities that exist in our system. She spoke in such thoughtful, smart ways about the real policies and the injustices that flow from those policies. And yes, she made that comment about, you know, identity politics and the use of that term to try to further divide people. Racism, sexism, it's systemic in our society, and we need to do a better job of addressing it. So it was not a rant. She was speaking the truth in the most compelling, as she often does, thoughtful, substantive way. And I just felt like in that moment, I needed to just say what I said, because part of it is, if not, you know, ill-intentioned, and this wasn't at all, language matters. So even though other positive things can be said, the fact... A word like that just stings, right? And so as we think about what we need to do to change systemic racism, part of it is changing the lens through which we view the world, the words we use to describe things, and understand that there are certain things that have meaning and import and may reflect that I don't actually get it. I don't actually see or understand you. And I think what we're trying to all drive towards is a better way to see and understand each other and experience life through the lens of another. And I think in this country, and particularly in this time, that's what we all need to collectively work on doing if we're going to move forward to truly change what we need to on these issues.
That's the voice of Attorney General Maura Healey. She's going to be with us till the top of the hour. You're listening to Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH, broadcasting live from the Boston Public Library.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy, Marge Regan. A little more importantly, the Attorney General is with us till 12 o'clock. And since the phones are working perfectly, Marjorie, let's do them.
Okay, let's go to Mary from...
Waltham.
From Waltham. Thank you. Hi,
Mary. Hi,
Mary.
Hi. Love you guys. Hi,
thank
Attorney
you.
General. I just have a quick question. My husband was taking maternity leave, actually paternity leave, for his company, which has a family policy. He was recently told verbally that they really didn't expect men to take that and that they expect him to work remotely throughout his leave. Just wondering if he has any recourse, you know, any steps that he can take for that. And I will take my answer off there. Thank you.
Take it offline, but also stay on the line and make sure that we get your number so that my team can talk with you.
Mary, don't go away. We're going to take your contact info. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Attorney General.
I mean, I just believe companies, employers have got to catch up with the times. One of the first things I did as Attorney General was institute parental leave for the office, making it available to all parents, irrespective of gender, when a child is born. And I was really glad to see that in the wake of that, other state agencies, starting with the treasurer, followed suit. This is where we need to be in terms of supporting families and, you know, more and more, we know more and more women are in the workforce. We know there is more shared responsibility at home. And I just think that parental leave is something that is so important, and maternal leave is something that, frankly, is anachronistic in this time.
Want to participate in a quiz, Attorney General? I'm sure you'd love a quiz. What's the only Western nation in the world? We learned this 2 days ago with John Gruber from MIT. Only Western nation in the world that has no mandate for paid parental leave.
United States.
That is correct. Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah.
How pathetic. The only, not one of a few, the only.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the phones.
Rose from Marion. Hi, Rose.
Hi.
Hi.
Go ahead. You're on with the Attorney
General. Hi, Rose.
I've had quite a problem here that I can't take care of because, I mean, I've done my best to call the Attorney General's office, the Congressman's office. But
she's right here. Talk to her.
Yeah. What happened, Rose?
Well, since 2012, I've had a new heating system put in my home. And things didn't turn out right. I've got secondhand sinks. I've got secondhand faucets. I've got, oh, golly, it's hard for me to explain.
Well, Rose, let me ask you this. When was the last time the person did work on your place?
Well, this problem began in 2012 when I hired Schett's Plumbing and Heating.
Yeah.
And I've had no equal heating in my home. I've had, I've suffered all between 2012 and up to the present. But I'm very upset because I've tried to call different lawyers. No one wants to handle this fact that I've been cheated. I've been abused, and I've had to suffer all this time here. I wasn't given, you know, the money that I have to pay to USDA.
Okay.
I still have to keep paying that month by month, and I wasn't given the right to have this job done right.
I
don't
like
secondhand stuff being put in my house.
Rose, can I respectfully make a decision? Is it possible that we can take her?
Rose, you're making a complaint about a home contractor. My office does handle a lot of home contractor complaints. I'll tell you what I'd like to do, Rose. I'd like you to stay on the line, give your number and contact information, and my team will get back to you. I have a New Bedford office, so not too far from you in Marion, and I have, of course, my consumer advocacy hotline, and I will make sure that somebody gives you a call and we see what we can do. Oftentimes, we will call up the contractor, and, you know, they'll take action to remedy things. I can't promise anything, but I'm sorry for your situation. Let's see what we can do.
Don't hang up, Rose.
My biggest problem is that it's under USDA. So, I mean, I've got a real problem.
Sure.
You know?
Rose, do not go away. Hello? We'll take all your information, and the Attorney General's office will be in touch. So please stick around. Thanks for the call, Rose.
Attorney General, your office announced you collected last year $46 million recovered from the medical fraud by the Medical Fraud Division in the state's Medicaid program of MassHealth. What are people cheating on? That's a lot of money.
Yeah, it is a lot of money, and it's an important thing that my office does. I'm really proud of my Medicaid fraud team of investigators, lawyers who are out there making sure that money that's meant to go for low-income, vulnerable people, people with disabilities, actually goes to them, right? So we see, unfortunately, a lot of people trying to scam the system. And, yeah, $46 million last year. We're going to continue to press, but here's what happens. Home health care, right? Somebody may retain personal care assistants or home health aides who are overbilling or who are billing for hours where they're actually not showing up. We sometimes see that. We see nursing homes who are, we had a big announcement earlier this year where we reached settlements with seven different nursing homes here in the state for their failures in the system to provide the adequate care. And in doing so, patients got injured, sometimes died. And that's a violation of Medicaid law, because if you bill like you're providing certain services and levels of care and then you're not, that's fraud in our view. We got people who, you know, bill for ambulance rides not taken, right? Or trips to the doctor not taken. We had a dentist who was like billing for every time he went to a particular nursing home. He was billing the travel time, essentially, there for every single patient he saw there, even though he's taking one trip. We've seen people who are giving Suboxone, right? You have these Suboxone clinics out there. We had doctors who were taking cash for Suboxone when they're dealing with MassHealth patients. They should never, ever be taking cash. And obviously, you know, we're concerned that they're pocketing that money and doing other things. So Medicaid fraud takes a lot of different forms. We're going to continue to be vigilant because we want to make sure those resources go to those who need them.
Catherine from Brookline, you're on with the Attorney General. Maura Healy, thank you very much for calling. Hi.
Hi, thank you, Jim. In light of Maura Healy's recent, I just heard her talk about how much language matters and the truth. And it's, knowing about the experience of others, I just wanted to ask her one question. She is not a medical doctor, correct?
Well, by the way, it's not she. She is right here. So
yeah, no, I'm here, Catherine.
I'm sorry, Attorney General Healy. Are you a medical doctor?
No.
Okay, I am a nurse.
Okay, true. You know what? My mom was a nurse. and my grandmother.
That's
and
great.
I've told this story before.
Don't go away,
I didn't. I broke the line of generations of nursing because I was afraid of blood. I'm over that now. But that actually led me to law school. I had to find something else. So I love nurses and the work that you do. In fact, my mom is substitute school nursing today.
She
at
is?
Age 76. Yeah,
good for her.
Yeah, she can't get away from it. But I apologize, Catherine. What was your
question? Take it away, Catherine. She's not
a
medical
professional. Yeah, I'd like
professional.
To talk. I have been waiting to talk. But I wanted to say one thing. I think you were very disrespectful in the way you talked about the people that are at the Right to Life March today. Number one. Number two.
Catherine, I want to be clear. I want to be clear for the audience. I never said anything about the people who are at the Right to the March for Life March. I have respect for the opinions and beliefs and religious views of all people out there. My comment was directed at President Trump and his being there at that Right to Life March, where, in fact, years ago, as you know, he supported women's access to reproductive health care. So I appreciate people marching. I appreciate diversity of views. I appreciate even, and I'm going to guess that you're somebody in the medical profession who believes in supports the Right to Life movement. And that is perfectly fine, Catherine. But what's not fine is that facilities, hospitals and clinics and elsewhere do not provide the access to health care that women need. It doesn't mean that you as a provider need to provide that or do things that you do not wish to do that are counter to your beliefs. But it does mean that someone within that facility needs to do that. That's
me.
All.
I've never, you don't know my beliefs. I've never said that. I said what you, I'm quoting you exactly. And one important thing, I want to send you a copy of the newest Journal of Medical Ethics article that has come out that said fetuses or children.
Catherine, do you have a question?
I'm sorry. This is,
Catherine, just, no, you're entitled to ask a question, and we'd love you to. What's your question for the Attorney General?
My question is, why doesn't she give the same respect to people that have a differing viewpoint? And I don't like anybody pretending they know the medical aspects of things when they're a lawyer.
Got it. Thanks,
yeah.
Catherine.
Again, I did not make any comments about those who are attending the March for Life, except for the president. And I did not speak as a medical professional. I did speak though as a lawyer and what the Constitution means in terms of what's afforded a woman and her right to privacy and her right to make decisions for herself.
Catherine, thanks for the call. You know, speaking about something you know a lot about, human trafficking, I know you spent a lot of time. In a minute, I hope you'll tell us about this summit you did on the Cape. But in a related note, if we can talk about Jeffrey Epstein for a second. I'm sure you've been following. Well, there's a local angle, as you well know. He gave somewhere in the neighborhood of $850,000 to MIT. Mm-hmm. Almost all of it after he was convicted of soliciting a minor for prostitution in 2008, did 13 months. People like Shirley Leung at the Globe suggested that he had to step down. One of your predecessors, Scott Harshbarger, was with me the other night talking about how there are some real, what should I call it, managerial misunderstandings and mistakes on the part of MIT. You oversee charitable nonprofits, do you not? Is there a role? I mean, one of the real questions is the report out of Goodwin Procter law firm gave what I will call, not them, that weren't these words, plausible deniability that President Reif knew nothing about it, even though everybody around him was involved, not to mention the fact that Epstein made 9 visits as a level 3 sex offender to MIT, and no young students, roughly at the same age as his victims, were notified that he was there. Is there a role for the Attorney General, rather than a firm that is not only hired by MIT, but has represented MIT in the past? Is there a role for you, oversight role, investigatory role in this at all?
Well, you know, first of all, I think that what's come to light is really disturbing, and I think MIT has to answer those questions, and as an organization, needs to look at policies and practices, including who it's taken money from, how that's getting vetted, and the like. And I think we've seen the problems with that in this matter. In terms of what our office does, you're right, Jim, I have oversight of our nonprofits out there, and colleges and universities are included. A lot of times what that means is policing what happens, how money given to an institution is spent, right? And did people act within their fiduciary duties? We've taken, you know, these school closure cases, right? When the colleges have shut down abruptly to the detriment of students and faculty, it's like, what did the board know when, and did they screw up and fail to act when they should have? So I'm saying, like, I'm paying attention to it. I'm looking at it. I think right now what's important is that MIT take the actions that it needs to take. And I think that there has been an important conversation among colleges and universities generally about what kind of money we're going to take, you know, and how that's going to get vetted. I'm not suggesting to you that my office has a role or a say in that.
But certainly
we have concerns about, you know, somebody, a person like Jeffrey Epstein.
Understood. Let's go back to the calls. Let's go to Gene in the car, I guess. He's on with the Attorney General. Hi, Gene.
Good morning. First-time caller.
Hi.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Hey, Gene. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm all right. What prompted you to call?
Well, I wanted to find out if anything's being done about the situation at the RMV with the in the wake of that tragic accident where the truck driver killed the 7 motorcyclists. The RMV started issuing suspensions to anyone who had an out-of-state issue. The problem is, and what happened to me, is that I was driving the church one Sunday morning beginning of December, and I got pulled over, and I was notified that my license to operate had been suspended, even though I had gotten no notification from the registry whatsoever. And then in digging into it, found out it was because I was fighting a speeding ticket in the state of Rhode Island, and I had moved in the interim. And
hey, Gene, I have to ask you the same question. Anyway, what is the question for the Attorney General, please?
The question is there anything being done because they suspended thousands of licenses by reciprocity, but once you clear up the issue, they're reinstated by reciprocity, and there's inadequate hearing officers at the registry. There's only a couple of registries that have hearing officers. I went 5 times to the Fall River Registry and was turned away each time after I had rectified the issue.
Okay, let's see what
Gene,
Attorney General has to say.
So, Gene, it's more, it's got to be really frustrating for you because it sounds like you had the right paperwork and all. So this isn't, like, within my control. It's something within the Baker administration and the RMB. I'm happy to have you stay on the line and see if we can look into it further. In terms of what my office is doing, we are investigating the Westfield trucking situation and looking at that industry about their lax practices that ended up allowing someone like that individual to be on the road operating, obviously to devastating consequences.
Gene, stay on the line. We'll take your information and provide it to the Attorney General.
Attorney General, our colleagues at the WGBH News New England Center for Investigative Reporting did this big study about racial disparities in government contracting. They found out that even though the state spends billions on contractors every year, that minority businesses, black-owned in particular, are not getting very much of that money. They had this study that said that a $1 million study last year, 2 years ago, excuse me, found that just 1% of design and construction spending went to African-American contractors, that African-American contractors who try to get the money have a horrible time trying to find out, to get through the courts, and that oftentimes there's a scam where, you know, it's supposed to be a black-owned or women-owned contract. It's not really, and the minorities contractors don't get the contracts. Anyway, in the course of this story, it said that the state attorney general's office has prosecuted only 6 contractors in the last decade for making false claims about using minority subcontractors. I know you haven't been there for 10 years, mm-hmm. but what's the status of this problem? What can your office do about it, is doing about it?
Well, you know, we can only prosecute the cases that come to us, right? I mean, we don't oversee those contracts or control the contracts, nor do we have visibility into them. But we have, including in my time, prosecuted those who are lying, you know, and making those misrepresentations in order to gain favor and gain a contract. And so we'll continue to do that. I think it's an important piece of reporting. I think it, you know, is an opportunity to take a deeper look at this. And I think that's what the governor spoke to the other day in part. And so, you know, this is an important part. We talk about racial injustice and racial disparities, and, you know, a big part of that is what's happening when it comes to employment, right? What's happening when it comes to housing? I mean, what's happening when it comes to transportation? And, you know, what is available out there? The issue's been raised about cannabis, right, in the industry, and who's actually getting those those contracts. I think a lot of people thought that with legalization, a justification for that was it was going to do something to address racial injustice. You know, it was going to be a social justice effort and, you know, something that would result in greater economic empowerment for communities of color. And I just, you know, anecdotally haven't seen that come to pass, but an important issue and important reporting. I do want to just put a plug in for our human trafficking team, though, because
yes.
we did have a really first important...
Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot.
No, no,
it's
a really,
it
was a really cool human trafficking summit, first of its kind, that we put together last week. We brought together prosecutors, police officers, investigators, people who are on the front lines out there, advocates, therapists, doctors, and the like to talk about this. It was 2 days of training on best practices and policies, and it was really about building connections across jurisdictions and across the state so that we can better take on human trafficking. And I also am proud because my human trafficking team just had a huge win 2 days ago where we got convictions of 2 individuals who are operating brothels in 4 communities in Massachusetts. And I just say to people, human trafficking is real, and we've got to do all we can to rid ourselves of that.
Before you go, can you talk about something, a positive thing? Well, that's positive.
That's positive,
but
right?
Every year you talk to us about these, I think they're called Health Summer Youth.
Yeah,
youth jobs.
Yeah,
job.
Tell
right.
us what's going on that front, please.
Hey, this is our 6th year in a row. We're giving money to organizations to hire teens for jobs that are focused on health and other activities and wellness. We've funded more than 850 jobs. These jobs, you know, are jobs where kids are camp counselors, sports coaches, cooking instructors, urban farmers, a variety of jobs, and we give them out throughout the state. The grant application period just opened, and so go on our website and apply. It closes February 21st, but I think it's a really great thing to be doing and really proud we're doing it. We also put out a new grant program that will fund organizations to provide jobs for people with disabilities.
Yeah, I heard that.
Really, really important. We want to make sure we have inclusive workplaces and greater opportunities for residents with disabilities. So I'm pleased about that. Again, that's an application that's open now.
So we only have 30 seconds. When you just made, I assume you're an urban farmer. You grow all your own food, don't you, over there in Charleston?
Oh, yeah.
You do.
Yeah,
so
it's really lovely.
At night, you get home and you
the
till
air,
the soil.
Yeah.
You know,
I till, but not soil.
You know, we had this question today, not from Jim Bride.
I did grow up, we had a farm growing up, like
New
a
Hampshire
little bit.
Kid,
yeah, we had
right?
a farm stand. We like used to sell tomatoes and corn on the
that
side
you
of the
grew?
Road. Yeah, on like a card table. I mean, it wasn't like a prolific farm, but, you know. Yeah.
Attorney General, these questions aren't from Jim Bride today. They're from emailers. Want to know when you're going to run for governor. You have anything to say about that?
No, I don't, actually.
Okay, well, time's up. Thank
get back
you.
To work.
It's good to see you, Attorney General.
All right,
thank
great
you
to see
so
you
much.
Both.
Attorney General
right.
Maura Healey joins us every month for Ask the Attorney General. Thank you very much, Attorney General Maura Healey, for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Up next, Emily Rooney is here for her famous list of fixations and fulminations. Keep your dial on 89.7. WGBH, we are broadcasting live from the WGBH studio at the Boston Public Library.
Ahead on Boston Public Radio, live from our GBH studio at the Boston Public Library, Fox News, the network that helped put Donald Trump into power, is it now showing how insistently it'll work to keep him there? It's only the 3rd time in U.S. history that a sitting president is facing a trial in the Senate that could potentially end with Trump being evicted from the White House. But instead of carrying the impeachment trial, Fox has decided to shield its audience from much of the process by running its usual pro-Trump opinion programming instead. A few minutes, we'll talk to Emily Rooney, host of Beat the Press, about this and more.
So if you don't know how hip-hop made its way into the Senate floor, now you know. Callie Crossley joins us to talk about how notorious B.I.G. materialized at Trump's impeachment trial. From there, we bring you our ongoing live coverage of that impeachment trial with House managers wrapping up their formal arguments. All that is next on Boston Public Radio, live from the WGBH studio at the Boston Public Library.
Thank you.
It's Jim Brady. I am Marjorie Egan. You're listening to hour number two of Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH, and we are broadcasting from the WGBH studio at the Boston Public Library, as we do every Friday. Hello again, Jim.
And hello again. Just a reminder, at 1 o'clock today, we will do what we have been doing and will be doing, which is taking live the proceedings in the Senate trial of Donald Trump. Again, 1 o'clock today. But first, here with us in the studio, well, it's not Studio 3, it's a library, isn't it? As I was saying, for her famous list of fixations and fulminations and more is Emily Rooney. Emily is host of Beat the Press, which you can catch every Friday night right here on GBH2 at 7 o'clock. Hello, Emily Rooney.
Jim and Marge.
Good afternoon. I've been furiously texting Emily all week long, updating her on Fox News non-coverage of the impeachment hearings. And basically, Fox News, which is the biggest cable news outlet, has the most viewers, while MSNBC and CNN, the cables, have been running the impeachment hearings, third time in our history we've had these things. Fox has blocked it out, has basically censored the hearings, shielded their listeners from hearing anything about the case, while Sean Hannity, who is calling Adam Schiff a BDI lunatic, congenital liar, compromised, and corrupt. Tucker Carlson is calling Hakeem Jeffries a race baiter. And Martha McCallum had a story about Hunter Biden's paternity case and a thing about how wonderful it was that Trump was going to the pro-life march. Last night, while the thick of the transgressions that the president has committed were being outlined by the Democrats.
What's your question, Marjorie?
My question is, isn't this a problem?
No. Apparently, you were watching Fox, too.
I was going back and forth.
You were watching Fox to see what you were doing.
I always try to monitor Fox News.
Let's step back here. Mm-hmm. When the impeachment hearings were taking place in 98 and 99, and it was Bill Clinton, there were far fewer options in the media landscape, including streaming and everything else. It was a much sexier, excuse me for using that term, but correctly so, trial at the time because it involved...
Sex.
lying, you know... a dress with genetic material on it. I mean, there was just so much more. All the networks and all the cables, Fox was not yet up and running. It had just come online. It was there, but it wasn't really competitive with MSNBC or CNN yet. They were all carrying it. They're not doing that anymore. Neither are any of the networks. They're dropping in and out of it. They're playing Days of Our Lives.
But that's not why they did this, Emily.
It's a marketing tool.
Oh,
It's a programming decision based on income.
It's a programming.
Fox News is winning at night because
programming
they're not
decision
caring.
Based on they don't want their listeners hear
criticism of the president. Their listeners are listening to Fox because that's their niche in the first place. Mm-hmm. And if they wanted to hear the proceedings, they could turn somewhere else.
So can you imagine if next week MSNBC and CNN declined to run the coverage
right,
of the
saying
president's
it was a marketing
lawyers,
decision because we make more
decision,
money with commercials.
I would be fine with that.
Well,
you would that nobody cover it?
What should we do? Should we have the government mandate that they carry the
proceedings? No, but they have a public responsibility.
No, well, so do the networks. They're making money all day long, Marjorie. They're not carrying the proceedings.
Yeah, but
they're not carrying the proceedings. They're packaging the proceedings. In fact, there was a hilarious thing this week. Lester Holt.
I didn't see it. What is it?
He did the longest tease I've ever seen in my life. Like 18 stories, coronavirus, Jeff Bezos, being exposed by the National Enquirer and the Harvey Weinstein's rape trial. So basically what he was saying to you, stick around. We've got sexier stories coming. And then he led into the impeachment thing because it was almost like a sense of obligation on the part of the networks that they have to cover this thing, but they don't want to.
So, but let me be clear. Let me ask the question again because I want you on the record so I could use it at the trial. So you'd be fine if, based upon marketing decisions, because there's no question
running
commercials is a lot more profitable than running no commercials. If all three cable networks chose not to cover this, you'd be fine.
Nobody
with
ran
that.
It. Nobody
you'd
ran it.
That's not nobody because C-SPAN is going to run it.
I understand.
NPR
but that's not my
is
question. Is it okay with you if all
yes.
three of them decide
yes.
not to
if
run it?
Yes, that's what they decide. That's what they decide. They don't have any obligation, Jim.
Well, don't
want to bring back.
They don't have any formal obligation
no
or
obligation.
Legal obligation.
Well, don't they have some obligations under the FDA?
No.
Don't they?
FDA.
Who's
no
FCC?
No,
sorry,
the FCC. That thing was, whatever you call it, the fair, what was that thing?
That's gone.
That's gone. 40 years ago it's been
fairness
gone.
Doctrine, fairness doctrine, we call it.
So
yeah.
You'd be fine. You'd be fine.
It's not that I'm fine.
Marjorie's going to have
not,
a stroke.
I'm not in Americans charge of the network. If I were running CBS, I would tell them I thought they should carry it. But I'm not running CBS. I'm not running Fox or MSNBC.
But I guess
these are news and programming decisions based on a bottom line.
Go
but
ahead,
here's
Marjorie.
The thing.
That's how it
so
works. That's
this
called
is
a free
third
market.
The impeachment in the history of the United States of America. And if nobody ran it and nobody could see it, you'd be okay.
I'd be okay. That's that, and by the way, apparently there's not a whole hue and cry over this. You think people are calling up Fox and demanding to know why they're not carrying
well,
it?
Well, unfortunately, our colleagues in the news media, until I saw this story today by CNN, which, of course, is in direct competition with Fox, I didn't see anybody even mentioning this.
Oh, everybody mentions
it. You mentioned it.
I mentioned
it.
No, Brian Stelter does a story about it every day.
He's the
media CNN
guy for media CNN,
guy.
Yeah.
Of course.
Well, we had a thorough search for this earlier in the week and couldn't find it.
Oh, no. He's done page after page after.
You know what, Mike? Can I break the tension here and say, you know what the solution is?
What?
The Agriculture Department. Should order that they only kidding.
Yeah, right.
Can I say a related kind of thing? Because I know Marjorie's aggravated. I'm trying to reduce that. I'm totally
it's
with you.
It's not the FDA. No, it's the FCC.
No, I am 100% with you on this, and I'm not on the side of Emily. However, I have a suggestion for the next impeachment of a president, and I don't mean this facetiously. Not that Adam Schiff is calling me for advice or Nancy Pelosi. Part of the problem is, and this doesn't speak to your issue, I don't care how dull and long it is, it's got to be carried. I'm with you. Marjorie, I'm with you. However,
it's on C-SPAN.
If the goal is to have the American people, as the second set of jurors, actually pay attention, and the real jurors, the 100 senators, pay attention, rather than filling 24 hours, which virtually nobody I know, including the most politically active or politically responsible people I know, have watched in its entirety, you know what they should have done? They should have said, we're not using our 24 hours. Thursday night from 6 to 9 p.m., we're going to present our whole case against Donald Trump in 3 hours in its entirety, and we'll waive the other 21
some networks
hours.
Some have been rebroadcasting.
I know, but the Democrats themselves, the reality is it is really hard, and I consider myself a pretty responsible citizen. I go home every night with a goal to watch till that night thing is over, not till the 2 a.m. thing. I couldn't last that long. It's hard. It's hard based on what we discussed,
hard, considering
the camera limitations, considering, and the Republicans are right on this one thing, it is repetitive, but in part it's repetitive because they know that different people are watching.
But would you feel about this about other, is it just this you feel that strongly about? Because there used to be a time, remember when the networks it was almost like, collusion, where they all got together and they put up with it, what's called a roadblock, so you couldn't watch anything other than, sometimes it was a debate, sometimes it was something else, but that's what it's called, a roadblock. Everywhere you went, that's all you could watch. So you had no options. Mm-hmm. Is that what we should have?
I guess I would like the three cable networks, which cover the news all the time, to be covering the most important news story there is. And if CNN and MSNBC don't
cover it. What's wrong with having two out of three of them doing it?
Because.
Why?
Fox is the biggest of them all, and it's a news
organization.
And it's a news organization. Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
They pretend to be a news organization.
What is it?
It's an arm of the government.
Well, it's an arm of Donald Trump's
presidency. It is an arm of the government.
So I guess that's even more reason. That's even more reason, in my opinion, if it's going to be an arm of Donald Trump.
They're not pretending to be anything other than that.
Yeah, but they are incredibly influential.
And during the day, they do cover the news.
There was a great story today in the Washington Post. Was it the Washington Post? I forget where I saw it. About all these regional radio stations now, like the little Rush Limbaughs, that because they will get Kellyanne Conway, they will get Don Jr., they will get all these people on their stations. I guess I want
Donald
what's
Trump
the point?
Is called into Boston Herald Radio, which one even knows
I guess
exists.
What I want is the news stations. I mean, there are different opinion
people.
Well,
do you feel the same way about NBC, CBS, and ABC?
I want all my news stations to be fact-based.
So wait a second.
I don't want
what
them to be
What about NBC
arms
and CBS
the
carrying the soap operas in the afternoon?
Well,
is that equally egregious?
No, because if we have three cable stations that are covering this.
Well, two are doing it.
And the biggest one and the most influential one is
people are watching that one because they're not carrying it.
Okay, we're moving on.
Okay.
So can we talk about one of Marjorie's other favorite people, Steve Mnuchin? Steve Mnuchin is this at Davos? He gives this interview? Yeah, he does. A reporter says, unfortunately, there's no sound of this. Greta Thunberg has called for public and private sector divestment from fossil fuel companies. Does that pose a threat to the U.S. economic growth that you guys are talking about? Mnuchin, is she the chief economist or who is she? I'm confused. Reporter, Greta Thunberg. Mnuchin, it's a joke. After she goes and studies economics in college, she can go back and explain that to us. Again, no sound of that. But here is Mnuchin on CNBC in regard to his dismissive behavior towards the woman who was named Person of the Year by Time magazine.
I think, quite frankly, our environmental policies are misunderstood. The president absolutely believes in clean air and clean water. He supports a clean environment. He announced this week the support of the Trillion Tree Initiative, which will have an important impact on emissions. And what the president has said is he got out of the Paris Agreement not because he doesn't like the environment, but because it was a bad deal. It was unfair for the U.S.
What's your reaction to this?
My favorite part of this whole thing is that this young lady has gotten so under the skin of the entire administration that they're calling her names. They're saying she should go to get an economics degree.
She handles it brilliantly, too, brilliantly, with great restraint.
I know. But these grown men, you know, bullying her, in a sense, telling her she should get an economics degree before she talks about divestiture. You know, she knows what she's talking about. And yes, it's an emotional calling for divestiture. It's like, but that's the same thing that happened with, you know, money. The getting rid of the kroner in South Africa, getting Harvard to divest from South Africa. It's the same kind of thing. It's a political rallying cry.
I love when he says how good the president's been for clean air and clean water, because as we know, just this week he made it easier to dump chemicals into brook streams and water all over the United States.
But
and America.
Isn't it amazing how they feel like they have to respond to everything she says? I mean, she's.
Well, but don't you think that's in part because Donald Trump responds to every criticism from everybody?
I mean, Mnuchin is trying to claim that he was joking. I didn't hear the context, but he said he was joking when he said she should go to get an economics.
Well, except his boss trashed Thunberg after he got the. And by the way, part of Thunberg did three tweets. This is a 17-year-old kid.
They're great.
My gap year ends in August, but it doesn't take a college degree in economics to realize that our remaining 1.5-degree carbon budget and ongoing fossil fuel subsidies and investments don't add up. And she goes on from there. And by the way, respectfully, with a little bit of sarcasm.
No, she's great.
She's the grown-up in the room
on
this thing. And by the way, if you don't remember Steve Mnuchin, one of the great photographs of this administration is Mnuchin and his wife. His wife in black gloves up to mid, what are these called, forearms. Remember that piles of money at the mint?
No.
What was that about? I can't remember.
But
what?
Weren't they like getting off an airplane in some war-torn country or something?
I can't remember what it was. But it was a lovely picture, I should say. It really spoke volumes.
Yeah, okay.
In any case, you directed us this morning, and we don't like being told what to do, Emily. You directed us today.
It was a suggestion.
To take it's sort of a quiz.
Kind of a quiz.
It is a quiz in the wild. Well, explain what the thing is, and we'll tell you, then we'll talk
about
it.
So this came out over this past weekend. It was in the Washington Post, and it's got, I think it's 10 Democrats, the 10 leading Democrats, is that right?
I think it's 10.
Okay. So then they ask you, as a potential voter, even if you're not registered a Democrat, but just out of curiosity, who politically would you align with? And so they ask you some fairly thoughtful questions about, the debt, about college debt, about
nuclear power, fracking, guns, everything.
Yeah. The Electoral College.
Marijuana.
Should we get rid of them? Immigration, and where would you? Regardless, so you're putting aside your feelings about somebody's charisma, or you like how they speak, or you like their presence, or whatever, and you're doing this blindly based on what they have said. And by the way, I don't know about you, but I didn't know where they stood on all those things.
Nor did I.
So I took one of my family members sent it to me, and it was fascinating to see. The dissimilarities and the similarities within a family where you came out. I came out almost to the person of who I'm leaning towards.
Really?
Yep.
Do you want to tell us who it is?
I could.
Well, you don't
have
to. Okay, fine. You told us the other day you thought Tom Steyer was doing great in the debates. By the way, you said it on the air.
He wasn't one of the ones.
Yes, he is. There are 9 people. It's Klobuchar, Steyer, Buttigieg, Warren.
Tom, I think, actually came in 4th on my list.
Bloomberg, Yang, Biden, Gabbard, and Sanders. The reason this is great, by the way, is after you take the quiz, which only takes about 2 minutes, not a quiz, the questionnaire, it not only tells you who you most agree with, who you least agree with, and it tells you everybody in between, it also tells you on each of the 20 subject matter areas where each of these 9 candidates are, so you can get a sense after
the vote. So were you surprised by your outcome?
Yes. I was very surprised. I think I can speak for both of us.
You were more moderate.
More moderate than we thought we were.
Yeah.
I mean, in fairness, while
did you come out with the same person?
No.
You didn't tell me who he came out with.
I'm not telling you either. Okay. But let me just tell you that. Well, I can tell you who I was least like. I was least like Tulsi Gabbard, by the way, for whatever that's worth. But I won't tell you who was most like.
But I had somebody that was very well known who was my least like.
Who was it?
Elizabeth Warren.
Oh, really?
Yep.
I'm not shocked.
She was last on my list. I like Elizabeth Warren.
I didn't say you didn't like Elizabeth Warren.
But she was
Warren.
Last on my list.
She was. Yeah. Okay. It must have been the wealth tax.
Elizabeth, no. You know why? Because Elizabeth Warren actually thinks we should televise the impeachment proceedings. No, but it is fascinating. And the thing you learn, if you were humble enough to admit it, is what you said a minute ago, is you think, particularly when you pay a lot of attention, which we purport to do, that you do know the positions of the major candidates on the major issues. But you will be surprised, but it gives you a sense.
Who's for abolishing the Electoral College of that group, do you know?
I can tell you in 1 second. Yeah, keep talking to Marjorie while
I said I was favor of abolishing. I said, what the heck?
So was I.
No, no.
Get rid of it.
You're not for it?
No.
Okay, I can tell you who's against it. Everybody of the nine are for it except for,
Or for what? Getting rid of it or keeping
Getting rid of it.
Oh.
Except for... I think it's Bloomberg, Yang, and Biden. Am I right about that? I don't want to
miss. Yeah, they tell you. It's fun. They ask about guns. They ask
no,
about
it's not.
Taxes,
Yang,
they ask
Biden,
about the deficit.
And Gabbard are the three who do not support
that. And you see where you stand on this thing, and it was interesting to me. You know, I was telling Jim before I listened to the Daily, the New York Times podcast. I really like it. This morning they did a fascinating thing about Pennsylvania, one of the swing states that the perception is you got to win that to win the presidency. And they were talking about fracking.
Which is one of the questions here.
Yeah, that was one of the questions of the Washington Post piece. And, you know, environmentalists hate fracking. I think it's a disaster. It's going to undermine our water supply. You know, fossil fuel mess, blah, blah, blah. And in Pennsylvania, because they now have full employment through fracking, they interviewed a lot of these union guys who can't stand President Trump.
Colorado.
But to a one, they said, well, I mean, if I can't feed my family and the green jobs aren't going to pay me $50 or $60 an hour, and there's very powerful unions with very good benefits and stuff like that, I thought to myself, wow, there's another reason if you're looking at because I think the progressives, obviously, Sanders, Warren, they are anti-fracking. And Klobuchar and I believe Buttigieg and
the question was kind of a tough one. It was like, would you stop it all?
No, some of the questions. I was about to say,
there's a lot of black and white.
Some of them are a little.
Well, I did take in that one. It said, would you ban it? Would you regulate it and try to reduce it, or would you?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
so they did give you some options
some of them
on there.
Black and white.
So it's a very interesting quiz. It's fun to take. What's it called, Jim, in the Washington Post? What's it called?
Well, I don't know what it's called, but what I can tell you is Emily is now going to spell for us backwards the name of the person she was. Which, if you Google, which are the 2020 Democrats? And Washington Post, you'll find the
last
quiz.
Letter is a G.
And last letter is a
Buttigieg.
A Buttigieg.
I didn't say it was.
Well, it's fine. Well, I don't think there are any other G's. Are there any? Klobuchar, Sanders, Gabbard. Steyer,
Gabbard,
Warren.
The Buttigieg or the Gabbard?
Well, he's a pretty impressive
it's not Gabbard.
Guy, by the way. You know what it is? She likes the young ones. Let's face it. That is
he's
okay,
young.
Emily. That's you're here for that, obviously, and that was great. But you're also here for this.
Incomprehensible.
It's out of control.
But how about common sense?
Doesn't matter.
Why not?
This is the kind of thing that drives people crazy.
It's your right.
Doesn't matter. I have absolutely no interest.
Hi. We're back. And I was. I'm a little confused here. So, what is the list this particular week?
So, I came up with a list of impeachment ridiculousness. There's a lot of stuff that was happening this week.
Oh, I'm totally
that it was
this.
Just. I mean, some of it's a little old, but, you know, first of all, this whole thing with the press, keep the press in the pens during the debate over the impeachment rules, requiring them to get a personal escort to go 15 feet between two different rooms where
ridiculous.
They were negotiating these, just outrageous.
It is outrageous.
I mean, these are seasoned reporters who have the passes to be there, and they're being kept in these pens. All right, how about this for ridiculous? In the opening, who's the guy who reads the opening?
Barry, in the prayer?
The chaplain?
Barry Black, I
hear
believe
ye,
his name.
Hear ye.
Oh, no, that's the... No, that's not the chaplain. That's
it's the
Sergeant at Arms?
Yeah, Sergeant at Arms.
Hear
ye, hear ye. All persons are commanded to keep silent on pain of imprisonment.
Yeah.
It's just like, what? You talk about arcane. I mean,
we thought they should imprison some of the senators.
We thought we should be arrested.
Okay, impeachment ridiculous.
Yeah.
You can't have coffee.
I know.
We know that.
Ridiculous. You can't have coffee.
You can
only drink milk and water. However, you have to keep it in the cloakroom, and they mark it as yours, and they can keep it cold. Although, if I were them, I'd keep it warm.
Okay, so who
Isn't
is the,
that
here's
ridiculous?
A quiz for you.
Yeah.
Who is the senator who...
Tom Cotton.
No, who started
oh,
the
Dirksen.
Milk... Everett Dirksen.
Yes.
Thank you very
Dirksen.
Much.
Yeah.
He
Why
requested
the milk?
Milk in 1960.
Because
he said he wanted a glass,
glass
of milk,
milk,
and they gave it to him. So now you
so
can
then
do
they
milk.
Changed the rules.
What?
Yeah. So, all right, so there's this roll call reporter, Joshua Eaton. Yeah. Are you following this?
What's he doing?
He is tracking milk consumption. He has like a little chart. It's hilarious.
Someone's got to do
Tom
it.
Tom Cotton is the one who's been drinking most
Oh, he
of
has?
Yeah. All right, ridiculous is Warren.
Well, Tom Cotton looks like he's about 18,
yeah,
by the
no.
way. Does he not? That's why he's
Warren
drinking milk.
Warren was drinking yogurt and milk combined.
Arrest her.
And Ooh. Then said it reminded her of buttermilk I drank going up, growing up. I can't think of anything more repulsive.
Than Keith, buttermilk.
That's
than
like,
buttermilk.
That's
disgusting.
Like, oh, I love buttermilk.
Straight?
Oh, you know what else?
Straight?
Yes, I do. And I also
disgusting.
Like kefir, which is what we used
kefir.
To call it in California. Ooh. It's the milk and yogurt combined.
I
kefir.
Love that.
All right,
next.
So how about this? Cory Booker only drinks non-dairy milk. Was he allowed to bring that in?
Vegan. He's a vegan.
Yeah.
I don't know what the answer is. Call him up.
I hope so. I don't know. I don't know either.
It's an outrage. Arrest him, too.
Oatly. Would you drink Oatly?
Go ahead.
As of recently, carbonated water is also allowed.
Yep.
All right. No phones. You can't even tweet, which in federal courtrooms, you can bring a phone
yes,
in.
You can.
With if you have a press pass and you're, mm-hmm. you know, or you're a senator or something, you're allowed to bring a phone in. You can tweet. You can't talk on the phone. You're not supposed to text.
They don't collect them anymore downstairs. Remember, they remember they used to.
No. Sort. You, if you're a reporter, you can bring it in.
Oh wow!
If you have that, you know that federal yeah. court badge. Yeah.
Okay, next.
All right, this is the most outrageous thing. No crossword puzzles.
But they are. They're doing stuff. And I mean, for weird, some of
they're
them are reading
Sudoku.
Books. Some of them. Okay, no crossword.
You're not
puzzles.
Allowed to get up unless there's a formal break.
But they are.
Of course they are.
Okay.
Which goes to the next most ridiculous thing is that there's no cameras. On the senators,
Amen.
So you can't see what they're doing.
That's the worst part.
Which
of
is forcing sketch artists to then do the sketches and then giving them to the various TV stations and showing them.
Well, you know
them.
What that's all about, for whatever it's worth, because you know I'm obsessed with cameras everywhere, particularly in courtrooms, and this is a courtroom. If they were allowed to get the reaction of senators, which they should be, more people would watch this. The goal of Mitch McConnell is to have as few people watch this.
No, I understand.
That's why they have the rule. It's
I'm
not
about
anything
ridiculous,
else.
That soundbite from 20 years ago where he's calling for a minimum yeah. of three witnesses.
Yeah.
And now he's saying that none should be included?
Well, I mean, everybody. Lindsey Graham, Alan Dershowitz, they have all totally reversed positions from 1998.
Okay. The absolute most ridiculous
Ooh.
Thing of the week
is
CNN's breaking news bug. They put breaking news on their coverage of the live proceedings.
That's
really
drives me nuts.
Breaking
yeah,
news?
They're a little
nuts.
Bit too obsessed with breaking news
no,
over at CNN.
That, I mean, they do it for virtually everything, but during the live coverage of
yeah.
the hearing, you're calling it breaking news.
Well, you have to get it to the credit of Fox News. They don't have to say
they
breaking
don't.
News because
they're
not covering
they're not
it.
Covering
exactly.
It.
You know what, though?
They're covering breaking news.
I said this the other day, but as long as you're here, I'll say it again. At the end of one of the evenings this week, I forget which one it was, Monday or Tuesday, whatever, 10 o'clock, Mitch McConnell gets up and makes this big announcement about they want to congratulate all the
horrible.
Pages.
Yeah.
They've done such wonderful jobs for them in the Senate. They're going back to school the next day. And then in a moment of bipartisanship, Chuck Schumer gets up there, you know, thanks the pages, standing ovation. Couldn't see any of the pages, of course.
No, of course not.
Because,
I know.
You know, think about their back. They're
ridiculous.
Waiting for their parents. They're all excited. They're going to see little Johnny back in Iowa.
Okay,
and
so
no,
what
they couldn't see any of them.
What are you doing tonight?
Well, we're doing some comparisons of impeachment coverage over the years. And we're also doing a look at that New York Times endorsement from last week.
Oh,
the
yeah.
way they put it out
Insane.
On Hulu and FX. And then, you know, they packaged the whole thing down. They had hours and hours of coverage. They packaged it down to an hour, which was kind of interesting to watch. But then they come up with the two people. You know.
Yeah.
Well, there's another issue there, if I may, because I haven't discussed this with you. Beyond the absurdity of not choosing a candidate, which is the whole point of an endorsement, the way they describe Klobuchar and Warren as the realistic and the radical is really
yeah.
loaded. It's not moderate and progressive. Realistic for Klobuchar,
Jim,
radical for
I mean,
Elizabeth Warren.
I really felt like I was watching the New York Times editorial board, if you know what I mean. It was like so self-important and so unctuous, and it was like, oh.
But I love being in the room. I liked being in the room.
I know, but didn't you get that feeling,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, of course. You
it's
do.
Like
you
everybody
do.
Perfectly coiffed in the, you know.
That's right. Just
all
like
right.
us.
What
and
else?
And this is an issue that comes up all the time, but now it's been raised again. Should reporters vote in primaries? Because in most states, Massachusetts, they've kind of changed this. You have to pull a ballot that you have, oftentimes you have to be registered in a party. They changed that here finally. But you have to register first as a Democrat or Republican to vote, and you can change it back. But so the question being, should reporters be declaring
because
a party?
It discloses your party.
Right.
Because I'm totally against these reporters who say they can't vote in finals. I think
Jim
it's
Lehrer
so self-important.
Well,
Jim Lehrer. Before
Jim
you
Lehrer,
go,
yes.
You just
Jim
have a
is one.
You
who,
knew Lehrer, did
I did
you?
Know Lehrer, and I've talked to him about that. He just felt like he didn't want anybody to think that he was tipping his hand one way or another. He never voted in his entire life. Yeah, he came on the show a few times. He was a fascinating guy. In addition to, just being a steeped, old-fashioned news guy, he was fascinated by buses. Did you know that?
No.
He had a fixation about transit, particularly buses. And he had a grandson who was autistic. And the kid became fascinated with buses and transit through him. And it was his way of releasing, you know, how kids get focused on autistic kids in particular. And that was their bond. But I can remember asking him about moderating the debates.
More than anybody ever.
Oh, my gosh.
I
said, well, did you get nervous? And he says he used to start shaking and quaking. And then he told his wife one day that he was really nervous right before one of the debates. And he said she practically slapped up me upside the head. Can you imagine? She says, you've got all the answers written in front of you. Just imagine how the candidates feel. Yeah,
that's
so
great.
It was very funny.
Yeah,
great.
So he just passed away.
He did have a good 85. Sense of humor. Yeah,
85. He did the NewsHour for years, decades.
Yeah, he retired
right?
in 2011, I believe. Yeah.
Emily, good to see you.
All right,
we'll be
good
watching
to see you guys.
Tonight.
Thank
Thanks
you
so
very much.
Much.
Yeah. Emily,
are we still friends, Marjorie?
Yes, we are.
I don't
still
know.
Friends.
I'll decide whether you're still friends.
We're still friends, Emily. Emily Rooney joins us every Friday. Of course, you can keep up with her on Friday nights right here on WGBH Channel 2 at 7 o'clock for Beat the Press. Up next, how the late rapper Notorious B.I.G. made it onto the Senate floor at the impeachment trial this week. Callie Crossey joins us for that and more. 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio, live from our WGBH studio at the Boston Public Library.
Back to Boston Public Radio, Jim Brady and Marjorie. And Emily just corrected me. There are three candidates whose names end with G. So forget that we got to the bottom of that.
Buttigieg,
Yang, and Bloomberg. In any case.
Oh, and Bloomberg, too.
Okay,
that's
fine.
Right.
In any case, we go to impeachment coverage live in 25 minutes. But first, joining us as she does every Friday, is the host of Under the Radar with Callie Crossley. That would be Callie Crossley. Hi, Callie.
Hi, Jim. Hi, Marjorie.
Hello,
how are you?
Callie Crossley. So before we go any further, I am going to ask to play a little music here. Here it goes.
I'm blowing up like you thought I would. Call a crib, same number, same hood. It's all good. And if you don't know, now you know.
Okay. Callie's got her moves going on here at Boston Public Library. So why am I playing that today, Callie Crossley?
Because Hakeem Jeffries, in response to Trump attorney Sekulow, who asked the question, why are we here? He said, I'll tell you why we're here. And he gave him a very formal response to the seriousness of the occasion. And at the end of laying out his three important serious things, he said, and if you don't know, now you
now
know.
You know.
I know.
And
it
I said,
great.
Did he say that? I mean, I heard it, and I was like, maybe, no, it could be. But
in any case, Trevor Noah decided there was time to comment on it. And here is what he had to say.
We are here, sir, to follow the facts, apply the law, be guided by the Constitution, and present the truth to the American people. That is why we are here, Mr. Sekulow. And if you don't know, now you know.
Oh! And if you don't know, now you know.
That's right. That's right, Congressman Hakeem Jeffries just quoted Biggie on the floor of Congress. Wow. The only thing I wish is that he'd used the entire line. That would have been amazing. He was like, if you don't know, now you know, nigga. Because if that happened, black people would have been out celebrating in the streets. It would have been MLK Day Part 2. All of us out there like, you know very well who you are.
Isn't he adorable?
Trevor Noah is something. I tell you.
He is something.
Yeah. Also, and Hakeem Jeffries has a pulse. I mean, one of the things that has been so appealing to me about Adam Schiff, whether you are with him or not on the merits, is it's clear he knows what he's talking about, and he's not just reading every word verbatim. Hakeem Jeffries showed the same skill on his feet, I should say.
Yes.
Which, by the way, getting back to our eternal topic about people paying attention, when someone speaks spontaneously and with a pulse, it's more likely, obviously, to engage an audience. And I thought Jeffries did it great there.
He did. I was just so stunned. I said, "Did he meet? Oh, what?" Yeah. Anyway, so I mean, I do think it says a lot about where we've come in terms of who's representing folks in the Congress as well, that you would have someone who grew up in Brooklyn who would be very familiar with Biggie, of all people, and enough to, you know, remember it at various times. I don't think this is the first time he's made a pop culture reference that is of his time, too. I was trying to remember the other time, but that's just who he is. So,
by the way, he's also chair of the House Democratic Caucus. Yeah. He's one of the leaders of the House of Representatives, not just one of the seven House managers. We're talking to Kelly Crossley.
So, Kelly Crossley, we always talk about how Iowa is not representative of New Hampshire either, of the rest of the country. I didn't realize it was the fifth whitest state in our country, but they've got something out there called the Iowa Brown and Black Forum, and the 221 is getting underway, and it's got kind of an interesting history.
I had never heard of this.
Neither had I.
I was like, what? So there is a gentleman who grew up in Iowa. He his name is Wayne Ford. He's a former Iowa state representative, longtime community leader, and he wanted to pull together the small number of folks of color in the state and remind people, yeah, it's the fifth whitest, but that we live here too. And he said, I wanted just to make sure that when candidates, presidential candidates came through to talk about their issues, they recognize there are some of us here and there are other people to address in this. So the first event was in the 1970s at a local nightclub. They sent out a note to everybody, and the only person that showed up was Jimmy Carter.
I love that.
And he went on to be president, so that sort of put him on the map. And then in 1984, they reorganized it to be the Iowa Brown and Black Presidential Forum, along with a Latino community advocate, Mary Campos. And they've been going strong ever since. And I first heard it mentioned on the air, I think I want to say, I don't know, CNN, somebody mentioned it, just in passing, as if it was always there. And I was like, what are you talking about? Because everybody's always talking about how Iowa is so white. I had never, ever heard of this. What I love about this story is that it was sponsored, so that it was carried live by Vice, which was one of the co-sponsors. But the other co-sponsor is something called Cashmere Originals, which is a production studio by LA-based Cashmere Agency. So Cashmere Originals is a production studio. It's developed by LA-based Cashmere Agency. They have big clients, Google, Adidas, BMW, blah, blah, blah. But what's the interesting twist, because this story is just so interesting to me, is that Wayne Ford, who all those years ago, living in Iowa, making his life there, who started this forum and then, you know, rearranged it with Mary Campos in 1984, Wayne Ford's son Ryan works at Cashmere Agency. So now that agency could afford to co-sponsor the forum, make it live, and you could watch it on the air. I mean, on Martin Luther King's Day. I think this is great.
Yeah, and they're getting, I think,
and by the way,
everybody.
Ryan Ford said, hey, I grew up here too. Yeah. Hello. You know, I might be in L.A. now, but I grew up in Iowa, so that's pretty interesting.
And unlike when all they had was Jimmy Carter showing up, now they're getting, I think,
everybody
is
there,
right?
Having said that, are you going to hate me if I spend 60 seconds with my usual rant?
No, it is.
It is a scandal.
It is a scandal?
That Iowa and New Hampshire have the roles they play. Let me just give you some numbers quickly. I know people are tired of me saying this, but 10 days and Iowa's over. 91% white, 3% black. The number of Latinos does not even register on their census stuff. And they lead the process of picking the leader of the free world. The largest city in Iowa is one-third the size of the city of Boston. Yeah. It is so unrepresentative. And frankly, we love going to New Hampshire, has an important role. So is New Hampshire. And the fact that these two lead off this process, and people say, well, don't worry, South Carolina, Nevada were added. If, let's say, this is not a pro or anti. Bernie Sanders in a poll out yesterday is crushing the opposition in New Hampshire. If Sanders wins Iowa and he's in the mix, mm-hmm. and he wins New Hampshire, it is likely this thing could be over in 3 weeks,
yeah.
or at least it gives such a colossal advantage. So I hope there are people with enough courage in these parties post-November to talk about regional primaries or something
that's
more representative of the American, the United States of America.
I do think it's telling that I had never, I mean, Marjorie was saying, had you ever heard of this?
No, I never heard of it.
It's so interesting.
Well, if they're going to have a caucus, it's great that this exists. Yeah, I prefer they not have
a
caucus.
I don't know why you'd have the Kashmir Agency in L.A., because I think L.A. is too warm generally for Kashmir. I think it's more of a...
People do wear it
very
there.
Astute observation.
So you wrote this great piece for our website, WGBH News, commentary on facial recognition not working, what's going on in different cities and towns.
Well, this is about the second or third piece I've actually done on facial recognition, because I'm very frightened out of my mind as I watch it be spread everywhere and accept it just as routine when I know it doesn't work on dark-skinned people like me and, by the way, women, because now more people are aware of, or we're all more aware of, that how artificial intelligence learns to do stuff is it has to be trained, okay? So they train the AI with regard to facial recognition on white men's images. Well, what's it going to recognize? it's going to recognize, because that's what the artificial intelligence was trained to do. All right, well, we recognize that now. There are now numerous studies demonstrating this. Of course, the one that really concerned me came out in December. This is the National Institute of Standards and Technology, and they just said quite bluntly that all of this facial recognition is biased, period. And I said the misidentifying of African-American and Asian faces is 10 to 100 times more than Caucasian faces, and the highest rate of errors involves the identification or misidentification of Native Americans. Now, come on, people. We cannot be using that as the standard.
How about the African-American members of Congress? What are the numbers on that thing?
Yes, there were 28 of them. They did a little test where they ran them through. They took 25,000, photos that mugshots by police, and then input all the faces of the congressional members, and 28 members of the who were African American came up as criminals, not criminals, but because that's what the AI is trained to do, because it's dark skin, so they have their other algorithms about how they determine who's a criminal or not. So this is. This is very, very scary, and I wrote the piece this time. I wrote about it because Cambridge, where I live, became the fourth city in the state to ban facial recognition, and I was just making the point that I will be hanging out in those cities.
Yeah. It's Brookline, Somerville, and what's the other one?
Northampton.
Northampton.
And by the way, Somerville, to its credit, was the first city on the East Coast, I think after San Francisco on the West Coast, that did this. We should also be asking the governor, and we should have asked the attorney general, and think about it. Is this something we should be doing statewide rather than individual communities until they have perfected? I mean, the ACLU's position on this, as you know very well, is they're not saying no, never, I don't think. No. They're saying until you can get it right, there's got to be a pause, is I think the expression they use. And I think that, and if they never get it right, then there's a permanent pause.
And what's accelerating this, which is very concerning to me, is that there is a voluntary, right now there's a lot of this surveillance going on at airports that you don't know about, you have no choice in. But people are signing up willy-nilly for that clear technology, which is you can voluntarily subscribe to, which then puts more people into the system. It's just very scary about it. I can see in about a minute everybody's going to say, well, that's how we always figure out. Well, no, that's not how we always figure out. And a lot of people are being misidentified, and we should pay attention to that. Because security, I think we all will agree, is a very serious situation, and we want the equipment that we're using to be correct.
Talking to Kelly Crossley.
So let's get back to what I really want to talk about here.
Here we go.
Latest on the royals.
People
may know the Meghan and Harry story, that one of the things that began their decision to not use their royal titles, go to North America for part of the year, earn their own money and stuff, was when Meghan wrote a letter to her father, this kind of a strange guy, sounds like kind of a deadbeat to me, asking him, this is Meghan, to stop talking to the press because, quote, your actions have broken my heart into a million pieces. So you would think that a 75-year-old guy who's kind of been a crummy father would read that letter from his daughter and think, maybe I should shut up.
Yeah.
But he's not shutting up.
No.
No.
And that came after he sold pictures and posed for paparazzi, which he, in this new documentary that he was just a part of, if I guess you can call it that, it sounds like a little bit of a sleazy show, says, yeah, I sold him and I'll sell him again.
Yeah. Well, he's just talking again after this. She's
we have
saying
a little sound,
my
you know,
heart.
Here.
Oh, we do. Let's play the sound.
Here he is. This is just a little piece from this estranged deadbeat father criticizing his daughter and her husband's decision to step away from the royal family.
Every young girl wanted to become a princess, and she got that. And now she's tossing that away for, it looks like she's tossing it away for money. Apparently $3 million in a 26-bedroom home isn't enough for them. They're turning it into a Walmart with a crown on it now. It's something that's ridiculous. They shouldn't be doing this.
Sounds like a very nice guy,
meanwhile,
by the way, loving father.
Yeah. Well, in this story that, from the Washington Post about this whole thing, he talks about how he's going to be paid for everything himself. He's
right.
complaining about her
that's
with
right.
the money
yeah.
and saying, at this point, they owe me, the royals owe me, Harry owes me, Meghan owes me, and for what I've been through, I should be rewarded. So I mention all this because you can sort of see where maybe she's got a few issues when this is her father.
Yeah, well,
in addition to all the racism in the British tabloids and the way they pitted Kate against her and have really gone after her in a way that's...
Well, this came, came to a head right before the wedding because he was invited to the wedding
right.
and they had to uninvite him because he sold the photos. And a lot of this, those of us who watch this, navel gaze the story very
That's
closely,
right.
understand that the half-sister is really very much goading the father into doing this stuff. So the half-sister who hates Meghan for whatever reason is just, been, she's horrible, whatever. She was a paid consultant to just be a nag during the wedding ceremony itself. And if you read all the stuff, it looks like she pushed the father to be a part of this. And they had sort of let it go. And then when he sold all the photos right before the wedding, here's Meghan. She's like, what's she going to say? She can't say to Harry, well, can he still come? No, he can't come. This is ridiculous, So then he got mad and said, well, as a result of that, I had a heart attack and nobody sent me any flowers. Are you kidding me? This guy is
Sounds like
beyond.
A nice family, actually.
Yeah, and I think it's, I always remember this line from... Gone with the Wind. I don't know if it's in the book, but it is definitely in the movie. There's a scene where Cary Grant, is that Cary Grant?
No,
it's what's his name?
Clark Gable
comes back.
Thank
he's
God
taken him. The daughter away because she's such a horrible mother. And he's, done all the stuff you're supposed to do as a parent. And she still asks for the mother. And he comes back. And she's like, thank you for bringing the kid back. And he says, I guess what I learned is, a bad mother is better than no mother at all. And so here we have the same, this is what I thought of with this guy. Like, this is a bad father. I guess is better than no father at all. Because she still reached out to him, even though he had done some nasty stuff with her with the half-sister before the wedding. And then it gets to a point where I can't bring down my whole husband's wedding. I can't. And my wedding, I can't. This can't go on. It has to stop.
Well, my favorite podcast, The Daily, The New York Times Daily, did an extensive deep dive into the Meghan Harry situation yesterday just to show that serious news organizations look into this.
It's the Washington Post you're reading from, too.
That's right.
That's right.
And they talk about how basically ever since the wedding, before the wedding,
right.
but really with the wedding, people really had it in for over there. Not only is she biracial, she's American, she's divorced, but she brings a gospel choir to wherever they got married. They got married in Westminster, I'm not even sure.
No.
These American... Yeah. They were just... I thought it was a great combination of his heritage and her heritage, and she mixed it up, and she had that guy Curry that's such a great...
But you're American. That just wasn't appreciated there.
No.
Yeah,
the long eyes were out.
Yeah. So what I thought is the best reporting, I gave it a rave on Beat the Press last week, was BuzzFeed, which did the investigative reporting to show that from the same publications... One picture would say Kate Middleton cradling her tummy. The other picture, the same story, the same publication would say, look at her. Why she got her hands on her tummy? What kind of crazy stuff is this?
Exactly.
Then the same, then next to that would be another publication that would say, oh, Kate, she wanted to have just the flowers she wanted and the scent she wanted through, and everybody loved it. Why is Meghan bringing in these candles? They're stinking up the place. I mean, it was... It was incredible.
It was incredible.
Side by side.
Yeah.
That's some good work.
Yeah.
20 examples of that.
Yeah, there was something to do with avocados, too. I don't remember.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well,
yeah. It was great that Kate liked the avocados.
Yes, and then...
the devil's plot that Megan liked.
Well, Megan, they said avocados are connected to, you know, human trafficking or something. I mean, it was really like, oh, my God, and she's eating them.
What do you think Gwyneth Paltrow is doing with an avocado?
Okay, oh
moving
God.
On. Kelly, what are you doing Sunday night?
We are inviting our New Hampshire insiders to come in and give us the lay of the land of the ever-changing land in New Hampshire, as we've been talking about. And you, perhaps people won't be surprised, but undecideds, biggest number still.
Really?
Yeah. Even though the data right now is showing that Bernie Sanders is way ahead, there's some other data that says maybe not so much. Looking at also Bloomberg and Deval Patrick, will people write in Bloomberg, as some have suggested? Have Deval Patrick's latest ads and Bloomberg's
ads? They've been good ads.
Yeah, they're very good ads. Has that moved any minds at this point?
He said to me the other night on TV, while he expects to do well in New Hampshire, even though polls so far aren't so hot, that he is on to South Carolina regardless of the New Hampshire results. But I interrupt you. Go ahead.
No, and so just, you know, looking at all of those issues, and both of them have been involved, both of my New Hampshire have been involved in Iowa, so they have a little insight about what it looks like from Iowa coming back into New Hampshire, and it looks like Iowa's going to have way more influence than it might have had, to your earlier thing, in past, because people are all over the place trying to figure out where they want to be. So there is that. And the second part of it is some good news with restaurants. As we know, we've been on this horrible trend of restaurant closings, ones that we love, beloved institutions. Well, the beloved Haley House Bakery Cafe is back.
Oh.
They said they were closing down temporarily. I didn't believe. I thought that was they were gone. But they came back. They reorganized. They're revitalized. They're re-energized. Their grand opening is February 1st, but they're doing a soft reopening now. I'm so excited.
By the way, the guy who runs it was right over here at the Newsfeed Cafe. At the end of our last show, he came and introduced himself, and I didn't know the news.
Yeah,
Bing
Broderick.
It was really quite exciting. Yeah.
Yes, it's so
that's great.
They got a new
that's
chef,
great.
Everything. It's fabulous. Yeah.
Terrific.
Okay.
We'll be listening.
Okay.
See you, Callie Crossley.
All righty.
Callie Crossley, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Callie Crossley joins us every week. I don't have my Callie Crossley stuff in front of me.
We know who she is. She is host of Under the Radar with Callie Crossley. You can see her on Beat the Press tonight at 7 o'clock. And what's coming up, Marjorie?
What is coming up is we're going to open the lines and talk a little bit about...
Very little bit.
...the impeachment before the impeachment day. Are we in day 4 or day 5 now?
Whatever it is. 1
Whatever
o'clock.
Whatever it is. Before it starts, we're going to talk a little bit about that. And by the way, Under the Radar with Callie Crossley is her show on Sunday nights at 6 o'clock here on WGBH. Channel 89.7 WGBH.
Thank you very much.
Okay.